Good morning. My name is Jody, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Pason Systems Inc. fourth quarter results and year-end results conference call. The contents of today's call are protected by copyright and may not be reproduced without the prior written consent of Pason Systems Inc. Please note the advisory is located at the end of the press conference issued by Pason Systems yesterday, which describes forward-looking information. Certain information about the company that is discussed on today's call may constitute forward-looking information. Additional information about Pason Systems, including the risk factors relevant to the company, can be found in its annual information form. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. President and CEO Marcel Kessler, you may begin your conference.
Thank you. Good morning, and welcome to Pason's fourth quarter 2016 conference call. With me here in Calgary is John Faber, our Chief Financial Officer. I will start with a high-level overview of fourth quarter performance and our outlook. John will dive into the details of our financial and operational performance, and we will then take any questions. The environment for oil field services remained challenging worldwide during the fourth quarter of 2016. However, signs of improvement have started to emerge. U.S. drilling activity, as measured in industry days, dropped 23% from the previous year period and declined 49% for the full year 2016. Canadian drilling activity was largely unchanged year over year for the quarter and was 34% lower for the full year compared to 2015. Most international markets were also negatively affected by challenging industry conditions. Pason's fourth quarter results reflect these declines in drilling activity. Revenue for the quarter was $49 million, an 18% decline from the previous year. Adjusted EBITDA was $15 million compared to $20 million in the previous year. The company incurred a loss for the quarter of $11 million. The bottom line was affected by a non-cash impairment charge of $17.5 million related to the write-off of goodwill due to the disposition of the operating assets of 3PS. U.S. market share and U.S. revenue per EDR, they were up in the fourth quarter compared to the previous year. Market share and revenue per EDR day in Canada were down, driven by increased competition and pricing pressure. Internationally, market share and revenue per EDR day were largely unchanged. At December 31st, 2016, our cash position stood at $146 million and working capital at $198 million. There is no debt on our balance sheet, and we are maintaining our quarterly dividend at 17 cents per share. Since the beginning of the new year, growth in drilling activity has exceeded our expectations, especially in the United States Permian Basin and also in Canada. The outlook for 2017 is clearly more positive than what we experienced in 2016. However, there continues to be a lot of uncertainty around oil company capital spending plans and therefore for drilling activity going forward. There is still a lot of oil on the market. Our two main objectives for 2017 are, number one, to fully participate in the industry's upturn while containing growth of the cost base, and two, to continue making progress to be a key enabler of drilling automation and data analytics strategies. We will do this through the commercialization of products in our core, on-bottom, and off-bottom product roadmaps. Pason is well positioned to maximize returns in the industry's recovery. Pason equipment is installed on over 65% of all active land drilling rigs in the Western Hemisphere, and we have a growing presence in the Middle East. We are the service provider of choice for the majority of leading operators and drilling contractors. In many regions, we can absorb higher activity levels without having to add cost proportionally. We are investing significant resources in future growth and are focusing our product development efforts on products that directly improve the efficiency, effectiveness, and safety of drilling operations, as well as the quality of the wellbore. Examples of this include our EPVT adaptive alarms and digital trip sheets, our AC auto driller, the ABLE directional advisor, and the recently announced deployment of the advanced drilling advisory system from ExxonMobil. In addition, the acquisition of Verdazo Analytics provides us with a strong analytics platform for oil and gas production and operations that complements Payson's market-leading drilling information ecosystem. Payson aims to provide customers with a holistic platform to analyze drilling, completions, production, and operational data. Moreover, Verdazo will be able to leverage Payson's established brand and footprint to grow into the U.S. and international markets. The addition of a significantly updated Live Rig View web service to our cloud-based service offering enhances the user experience for the many back-office users of Payson data. Additional functionality will be added throughout 2017. The sizable capital investments we made through 2014 and into 2015 have enabled us to deploy a very capable and flexible rig site IT and communications platform with the ability to host new Payson and third-party software. Therefore, our capital expenditure will be relatively small going forward, with a larger portion of our current development efforts focused on software and analytics. For 2017, we intend to spend up to $25 million in CapEx. We are optimistic about Payson's market positions and prospects and are excited about the potential of our new products and services. And I'm now turning the call over to John Faber for a more detailed look at the financials.
Thank you, Marcel. Consolidated fourth quarter revenue of $48.8 million was down 18% year over year, from $59.8 million in the fourth quarter of 2015 and up 26% sequentially from third quarter 2016 revenue of $38.6 million. Significant year-over-year decreases in industry activity in many of the company's major operating regions was the primary driver of the revenue decrease compared to the fourth quarter of 2015, while higher industry activity compared to the third quarter of 2016 drove the sequential revenue increase. EBITDA for the fourth quarter was negative $2.3 million and was significantly impacted by a $17.5 million non-cash impairment charge, substantially all of which related to the write-down of goodwill following the company's decision to divest the net operating assets of 3PS Inc., a previously wholly owned subsidiary. This compared to positive EBITDA of $20.7 million in the fourth quarter of 2015. Adjusted EBITDA of $15.2 million for the fourth quarter was a 79% sequential improvement from $8.5 million in the third quarter of 2016 and was 24% lower than adjusted EBITDA of $20.1 million in the fourth quarter of 2015. Depreciation and amortization expense in the fourth quarter of $10.5 million compared to $19.8 million in the fourth quarter of 2015 and $14.9 million in the third quarter of 2016. The company recorded a net loss of $11.3 million for the fourth quarter of 2016. On a per-share basis, the net loss equated to 13 cents per share, compared to a net loss of 1 cent per share in the fourth quarter of 2015 and a net loss of 8 cents per share in the third quarter of 2016. The fourth quarter was significantly impacted by the aforementioned goodwill impairment. For the full year of 2016, consolidated revenue totaled $160.4 million, a 44% year-over-year reduction from $285.1 million in 2015. Significant reductions in drilling activity in each of our major operating regions was the primary driver of the revenue declines. EBITDA for the year of $3.5 million was down $66.2 million from EBITDA of $69.6 million in 2015. 2016 EBITDA was significantly impacted by the previously noted goodwill impairment charge as well as significant restructuring costs incurred in the first quarter of the year. Adjusted EBITDA of $31 million in 2016 was $65.5 million lower than adjusted EBITDA of $96.5 million in 2015. Full year 2016 depreciation and amortization expense of $55.4 million was down 32% from $81.4 million in 2015, largely due to reduced carrying values of rental assets as a result of impairment charges recorded in the third quarter of 2015 and a significantly lower capital expenditure program in 2016 as compared to previous years. The company recorded a net loss of $40.6 million, or 48 cents per share in 2016, compared to a net loss of $14.6 million, or 17 cents per share in 2015. The net loss includes the significant goodwill impairment and restructuring charges previously mentioned. I'll begin a review of the segmented results with our U.S. business unit. The U.S. business unit posted fourth quarter revenue of $28.6 million, down 18% from $34.7 million in the fourth quarter of 2015. Significant declines in industry activity more than offset year-over-year gains in both market share and revenue per EDR day. Sequentially, revenue was up $6.3 million, or 28%, from the third quarter, driven by improved industry activity, increased market share, and higher revenue per EDR day. Operating income of $8.7 million was down $2.4 million from operating income of $11.1 million in the fourth quarter of 2015, and increased 96% sequentially from $4.4 million in the third quarter of 2016. Full year U.S. revenue of $91 million was 47% lower than $170.9 million in 2015. For the year, U.S. market share was down slightly from 2015, and revenue per EDR day, as measured in U.S. dollars, was unchanged. Operating income for the year of $14.9 million was $44.9 million lower than operating income of $59.7 million in 2015. Turning now to the Canadian business unit. Canadian business unit revenue of $14.6 million in the fourth quarter compared to $16.4 million in the comparative period of 2015. Industry activity was largely unchanged year over year, while increased competition and continued pricing pressure contributed to reductions in market share and revenue per EDR day. Sequentially, Canadian revenue increased 36% from $10.8 million in the third quarter of 2016. Despite the year-over-year reduction in segmented revenue, operating income improved by $4.7 million from $1.4 million in the fourth quarter of 2015 to $6.1 million in the fourth quarter of 2016, owing to restructuring efforts taken in the first quarter of 2016 and significantly lower depreciation in 2016. Canadian business unit revenue of $46.2 million in 2016 was 37% lower than 2015 revenue of $73.8 million, mostly as a result of reduced industry activity in 2016. For the full year, market share was unchanged from 2015, while revenue per EDR day was 6% lower than 2015. Operating income of $4.5 million for the full year was 34% lower than operating income of $6.7 million in 2015. Moving to the international business unit. In the fourth quarter, our international business unit posted revenue of $5.6 million, a 36% year-over-year decline from $8.7 million in the same quarter of 2015. Sequentially, revenue was flat from the third quarter. The majority of our international markets have seen similarly challenging operating environments as those experienced in North America. The significant year-over-year decline was also impacted by a significant devaluation of the Argentinian peso late in the fourth quarter of 2015. An operating loss of $446,000 in the fourth quarter compared to an $854,000 loss in the fourth quarter of 2015 and an operating loss of $2.3 million in the third quarter of 2016. 2016 revenue in the international business unit totaled $23.3 million, down 42% from $40.4 million in 2015. The full-year comparison is also impacted by the devaluation of the Argentinian peso in the fourth quarter of 2015. A segment operating loss of $4.1 million in 2016 compared to operating income of $414,000 in 2015. And finally, I'll briefly review capital expenditures in the balance sheet. Capital expenditures in 2016 totaled $12.9 million, down 75% from capital expenditures of $50.8 million in 2015. Fourth quarter CapEx in 2016 included adjustments due to payments received from refundable tax credits related to previous years' deferred development costs. We expect to spend up to $25 million in CapEx, including capitalized portions of R&D and IT expenditures, in 2017. At the end of 2016, we had positive working capital of $198 million, including a cash balance of $146 million. There continues to be no debt on the balance sheet, and we are maintaining our quarterly dividend at 17 cents per share. At this point, we would be happy to take any questions.
At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Again, if you do have a question, it's star 1. Your first question comes from the line of John Morrison of CIBC World Markets. Your line is open.
Morning, all.
Morning, John.
Morning, John.
In terms of your Canadian market share changes, how much of the decreases, either sequentially or year over year, would you believe is a function of core customer losses versus other factors that can create some noise in the data that we can't necessarily always track?
It's a good question, John, because the market share in Canada and the U.S. is always a question of mix, both customer and, to your point, on the Canadian side in particular, there's a mix of things that are in the oil and gas rig count and outside the oil and gas rig count. It's not abnormal for us to see a decrease in the fourth quarter. So if you look back over the last 5 years, we would have seen decreases from the third to fourth quarter in Canada every year. So that's not abnormal. I think it is a mix of both. The question of mix of oil and gas activity versus non-oil and gas activity, and the fact that every year some of our competition does pick up rigs in the fourth quarter, and that would be the same again this year.
So it's fair to assume that from a customer exposure perspective, you haven't seen any material step change in the last 3 or 6 months, so to speak of.
That's correct.
Okay. Can you give any more color on what the pricing environment in Canada looks like right now? Basically, what I'm trying to figure out is you've gone through and obviously done some minor price concessions to respond to the competitive environment. Do you believe that those are largely behind you at this point, or do you believe that incremental concessions might have to come to maintain market share with certain customers?
So I think with our price concessions, we are probably in about the mid-teens of our pricing from 2014, which would have been peak pricing, so off about up around 15% in aggregate in Canada. As to whether more will be necessary or required, it's hard to answer, right? It all depends on what competition does. Going back to your earlier questions, right, you're obviously going to try and defend core customers, and we will try to we'll do what is necessary here to hold on what we consider to be strategically important positions for us. So I can't really answer that question, not knowing what competition will do going forward.
Okay. In the U.S., can you give any more color on the detail of the large market share gains that you made in Q3? I realize that the Permian in the southern U.S. has been a focus for you guys, but I was just wondering if specifically you had won any new customers that you can speak about, or was it, again, just a function of mix of producers and drillers putting assets to work in the quarter?
So that most of the uptake in market share and most of the activity uptake is actually, as you know, in the Permian. And our market share in the Permian is, the average is a bit higher than the overall average in the U.S. So as activity shifts to the Permian, that's helpful to us. I think the one relationship that we have talked about on previous calls is that we are on more rigs with the leading drilling contractor in the United States, the largest drilling contractor. So that has been helpful, and the fact that that drilling contractor is quite active in the Permian.
Last one just for me. John, on the CapEx side, I realize you don't want to give a multi-year forecast, but is there any reason to believe that 17 will be drastically lower than what we should expect in 18 or go forward, or is this kind of the new norm of what you would expect for ongoing capital outlay?
Yeah, I think 16 was abnormally low. 17, you know, we've talked about up to 25, and I think that is more reflective of a new norm. You know, similar to the comments Marcel would have made in his outlook around the fact that much of our product development efforts at this point are more software-based, and we're becoming less capital-intensive in the business generally.
Appreciate the color. I'll turn it back.
Okay. Thanks, John.
Your next question comes from the line of Ian Gillies of GMP. Your line is open.
Morning, guys.
Morning, Ian.
I just wanted to follow on John's question about Canadian market share, and I acknowledge you probably don't want to give away the whole playbook, but outside of price, I mean, what sort of other ways do you think you can protect your market share from new competitors moving forward?
So, the key for price is always the last lever you try to pull. I think the first and foremost is always around service quality, both in the field and the office, and that's really been where Payson has been able to differentiate itself. So we continue to focus on providing the best possible service experience for all the users of Payson equipment in the field and for users of Payson data in the back office. And I've spoken to some of the initiatives there in my introduction. The other is product innovation and product evolution. We believe that our product pipelines, our roadmaps, look very, very robust, and we have a lot of exciting things that are rolling out, which will create a lot of value. So we feel very good about the combination of our service advantage and our product advantage. Again, pricing is the last lever if you have to pull it.
Okay, and maybe a bit of a follow-on to that one. Are you able to provide any color of whether there was any, I guess, changes in market share in Canada through January, if you have that data, if you're willing to share that data?
You know, it's a little bit early to say to for sure, and I certainly don't think it would be so significant from what it would have looked like exiting the year. Again, we often see some of this shifting of market share as rig counts change. If anything, it might be up a little bit in January, but I would expect that it's not significantly changed.
Okay, that's very helpful. From a product offering standpoint, you noted a new version of Live Rig View that's either has been rolled out or is going to be rolled out this year. I mean, how do you think that ends up impacting the overall service offering as you go through the year, and why are you excited about that?
So maybe to go a bit into the depth of the technology here is the new service offering, as I said, improves the quality, the experience of the back office user. One is simply a technical aspect. The new service is web-based. It's in HTML5 code as compared to Java, which means you don't need to run the current version of Java on your device to view the Payson data. That's very beneficial. It's much easier. It creates a better user experience. The other is with the introduction of that new service, we're adding new and additional functionality throughout the year that customers have not used before, have not seen before. There will not be a change in price at this point. There's no plan there. Like Ricky, you will have the same list pricing as before, but the user experience should significantly improve.
Okay.
And it is live already in a beta version right now. So I think about a quarter to a third of all back office users of Payson data would have switched to the new offering.
Perfect. Thanks very much. I'll turn the call back over. I appreciate the detail.
Thanks, Ian.
Again, if you do have a question, please press star 1. Your next question comes from the line of Elias Soskals of Industrial Alliance Securities. Your line is open.
Good morning.
Good morning, Elias.
Got a question that focuses on the Exxon Drilling Advisory System license. I was wondering, do you see anything quantifiable from that coming within the next year or two? And The second question, has that generated any buzz from your clients?
So the second question first, it has created a significant buzz in the marketplace. I think the Exxon Fast Drill program, of which DAS is a part, is actually fairly well known in the industry as being a very effective tool to improve drilling performance, both in terms of drilling speed and increasing the length of bit runs and enhancing the life of the drill bit. So people tend to be very excited about that, and there's lots of customers or potential customers who are very interested in that. We clearly have very high hopes around being able to successfully commercialize that and it being meaningful to our bottom line here over the medium term at least. Now, I'm not comfortable putting a number out there at this stage. It is early days. But I can probably say that DAS will essentially have, there will be two versions of DAS that we intend to commercialize. One is one that we call DAS in advisory mode, essentially an interface for the rig crew, for the driller in the field, that provides recommendations regarding the optimal drilling parameters that the driller can choose to follow or ignore, depending on his assessment of the situation. And that will be an offering that will have its own price point. And secondly, there will be an implementation of DAS in automation mode, where the algorithm actually provides set points and maybe more for the auto drillers and the control systems at the rig, and is therefore an integral part of drilling automation going forward. And that will have a separate commercial model and a separate price point. Again, I'm not comfortable talking about forecasts in terms of revenue and margins at this point.
That's fine, but I was going to have to ask a question. So that's it for me. Thanks very much. My earlier questions
Elias.
Were asked.
Thanks, Elias.
There are no further questions at this time. I'll turn the call back over to the presenters.
There's one more question.
You have a question from the line of Jeff Federley, Peters & Company. Your line is open.
Hey, morning, guys. Two follow-ups on this. Your first strategic priority you talked about for 2017 in terms of fully participating in industry upturn, how do you think about the incremental margin opportunities within the business and how far you can scale the activity before actually backfilling on the costs or infrastructure side?
So, Jeff, it's John. Again, we've talked in previous calls around it really depends on the nature of where the activity picks up. Clearly, it's been very concentrated in the Permian region to date. That's an area where we were underrepresented historically, so there has been some investment in that area. There's some investment in the repair of some product as the activity picks up as well. So, you know, we've talked in the past around feeling like we could add $50 to $100 million of additional revenue at north of 75% incremental EBITDA margins. Still comfortable with that sort of general view. The earlier part of that has a little bit of margin compression because of things like repairs and some of the staffing in various regions. But the general outlook of $50 to $100 million of additional revenue at north of 75% EBITDA margins incrementally, we remain comfortable with.
So when we look at your Q4 over Q3, I calculate about a 67% incremental EBITDA margin at the corporate level. Should we expect that number potentially scales as you move into Q1, for example?
I would expect that it would scale into Q1 based on what I know today, yes.
Okay, great. Last piece on, you talked about an expanding presence in the Middle East. Where do you sit today, both within Saudi and in that broader market? Activity-wise, and sort of how would you rate your progression so far?
So maybe by way of background, just as a reminder, so we operate through two different models in the Middle East, one through a 50-50 joint venture in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, and then as Payson proper in the broader region out of a business development office in Dubai, which we opened fairly recently. So our market share in Saudi Arabia today would be approximately 10%, so fairly low by Payson standards. However, we recently did get our first sizable contract with the national oil company in Saudi Arabia, and we will get which will allow us to go on more rigs here as of May. Can't say much more than that, but that's a very exciting development for us regarding growth in the kingdom for us. In the broader region, I think we probably have equipment on about a dozen rigs or so in Oman, United Arab Emirates, Kuwait, one or two on and off in Iraq. And that's essentially slow and steady, I would say, at this point. Again, there has been some interest related to our new products and services that we have talked about from the Middle East specifically, too. So we are actually spending quite a bit more effort for business development in the region in the first half of 2017.
From a profitability standpoint, would the Middle East be comparable, competitive with margins you generate in other critical mass areas internationally?
It's clearly not yet the case, given that we have not yet had that critical mass. So it's all dependent on volume. So as long as we do stay fragmented with a handful of rigs in various countries, I think it will be hard to achieve margins similar to Canada and the U.S. But as soon as I think we do get critical mass, especially in Saudi Arabia, that's certainly possible.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate the color.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks, Jeff.
There are no further questions in the queue.
Thank you, everyone. Have a nice day.
This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.